This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. This is how Clifford White describes himself as a teenager.
Rambunctious and wild. Like, I didn't really have no limitations on what I wanted to do to get what I needed or what I wanted.
And what he wanted was what a lot of teenage boys want, even today.
I wanted Jordans.
That's Nike Jordans, shoes, and other nice things. But they're expensive, and he didn't have the money. So he tried to get some money with a gun.
In my mind, there was no other way, but now I see it was other ways. I could have went and got a lawnmower, went and cut grass and stuff like that.
He was caught, convicted of armed robbery and gun possession, and sentenced to prison.
22 years, 3 months, 19 days.
He went in 1997. He got out on parole in December 2012. He was 34. The world he came back to was different.
Got on Facebook for the first time. I'd never seen the internet before, 2012.
Clifford had support that a lot of ex-offenders might not have. He pays rent on a basement room in his parents' home in Columbia. His sisters showed him how to use a smartphone and gave him a car. He started applying for jobs and held down a few for months at a time, but they didn't pay much. One temp job at a department store almost turned permanent, but he was fired when they looked into his background and found he'd lied on his application.
When it says, have you ever been convicted of a crime? I said, no. I mean, nobody's going to hire you when they see that yes. They can say they do, but they don't.
So he went back on the job hunt.
I thought it'd be difficult to find a good-paying job, but not so difficult to find a non-good-paying
job.
Any
job, yeah.
But dang, the case. Any job is like a high-paying job. It's hard to find any job.
And being unemployed was not an option.
Convicts, our freedom costs. I'm saying we have to pay to be on probation. It costs $50 a month. I got this pressure where I have to work. I have to keep employment. I can't go 30 days, 90 days without having no job, without getting in any type of trouble. Who has more incentive? Somebody that wants to make $10 an hour or somebody that has to make $10 an hour? I have to make money. Or not make money, but I have to have a job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm working for my freedom as opposed to somebody else just working. It's a difference. Now the internet, you can just press a button, submit your resume, press a button, and it might send your resume to 60 jobs. And when I'm pressing this button every day on different jobs, on different sites, and I'm not getting no calls back, or I might get a call back, and I had a few of them tell me, well, you got a record and this and that. Or then when people show me how easy it is to see my whole record on the internet, you know, and it's a struggle if you don't have a record. But I knew this before I left prison, and this is why I studied so diligently. Like, anybody that knows me knows Cliff studies that business. Because I used to tell him, this is what's going to keep me out of jail. This is the only thing, being able to rely on people to get a job, when you're looking at and you're reading the newspaper of high unemployment rates of people that went to college, what you think it's going to be like for ex-con?
Since he felt no one was going to hire him, he took what he'd learned about business in prison and started his own.
I have two companies. I have my own carpet cleaning business, and I clean out foreclosed houses for banks. My business is really out there. It started. But I'm having a rough time with capital and things like that. But because I'm still establishing credit, and, you know, banks not going to mess with me yet and stuff like that. But I want to do something that I'm worth. And it might sound picky, and I'm just being honest, but you can't offer me a job $5. I'm worth something. I got a list of 50 people that satisfy customers. I would say you can go to my Facebook page and see all the comments. And, you know, I would tell the people, how would we look at you if we judge you by the things you did when you was a teenager? Because when I got incarcerated, I was a teenager. So would you want to be judged by the things you did as a teenager opposed to when you're in your 30s? If you don't want to be judged, then don't judge me. And from there, I might be your best employee. If you hire me, I'll probably be your best employee other than somebody else that's taken advantage of a situation because you might have hired them because of how they look or their race or because they got a clean record, but they might not work as hard as me. So, you know. Don't judge a book by its cover. Read it. You might like what you see.
Clifford White. We have a link to his business on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. There are a lot of people, as Clifford White was, looking for jobs in the Baltimore region. About 81,000, according to the latest jobs report from the U.S. Labor Department. That's an unemployment rate of about 5.5% in April, down from 6% in March. What are the barriers keeping those 81,000 from finding a job? That's the question a new report from the Opportunity Collaborative asks. The Opportunity Collaborative is a group of governments, agencies, and nonprofits developing a regional plan for housing, transportation, and workforce development. I spoke with the author of the new report, economist Chris Seals, from the consulting firm RDA Global. Also with us was Jason Perkins-Cohen, executive director of the Job Opportunities Task Force, a workforce development nonprofit based in Baltimore. I began by asking Chris Seals whether a criminal record like Clifford White's is a particularly important part of the barriers to employment he found in the Baltimore region.
Really, Sheila, it is. And I have to say I really applaud him for his hard work in just trying to overcome the barriers that he faces. I think it was Maya Angelou that once said, "Nothing will work unless you do." And it seems that he really has. But his story is far from rare. What we found in our survey was about 1 in 5 job seekers in the Baltimore region share a story like his. They have a criminal record that is one of the barriers that they face to employment opportunity.
I want to get back to Clifford's story, but you found a whole complex of barriers to getting a job: lack of basic skills or essential skills and education, lack of computer skills and tech skills, housing too far from jobs, public transportation that costs too much or takes too long, structural racism. Did some particular barriers leap out at you as most crucial to break down to get people into jobs?
Well, just kind of talking about Clifford's story, the challenges for someone who has a criminal record are particularly high. In Clifford's case, he had the advantage that he had family that was able to provide him with a car, but that by itself can be a challenge. If you don't have access to a car or even access to a permanent place to live, it can be very difficult to even get a license. There are very few industries that have jobs that are available for someone with Clifford's background. One of those would be the construction sector. And if you wanted to work in the construction sector, having access to transportation to get to the work site is going to be absolutely fundamental. To your point earlier, there is a kind of constellation of different barriers and that people face. And on average, the job seekers that we interviewed for our study had at least 3 barriers, but they fall into really 6 different categories. Transportation and housing barriers, kind of one of the most common ones. So for lower skilled adults, they tend to rely more heavily on public transportation as a means to getting to work. But what we learned was that only about 1/5 of jobs that can support a family, so they pay a wage that's a family supporting wage, and have a mid skill level. By mid skill level, we've defined that as jobs that require 2 years of post secondary education or less. Only about 1/5 of the jobs in the region are accessible via public transportation. Within about 1 hour and 15 minutes commute time, which is about the max of what we think is reasonable for a person, especially someone who has a family. So transportation barriers, there is also a lack of jobs available that are mid-skill jobs that pay a family-supporting wage.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, but let me pull Jason Perkins-Cohen in. In your experience running the Job Opportunities Task Force, how do these different barriers tend to pile up on each other?
Well, that's exactly what happens, is they do pile up on each other. And it's the combination of the barriers that make it such a difficult web to untangle. So in the case of, I don't know Clifford's story beyond what he said, but for a lot of folks who are coming out of incarceration, having that background is one barrier. But for example, if they had a child support order when they went in, with the first enforcement mechanism in child support is to take away your driver's license. So Chris just spoke about the transportation issue. So even if you had a license, you would most likely not have it once you were incarcerated and released. And Chris spoke about those challenges as well. And then, you know, the other challenge is just a lack of money to meet basic needs. I mean, Clifford spoke about needing $50 a week, you know, to stay out of jail because he has to actually pay a fee. Excuse me, not a week, a month. That's a serious issue. These little fines and fees are significant. And if you're constantly having to pay these fees and other assorted things that are beyond your basic needs, it's another thing that's really holding you back.
Chris, about the jobs available you mentioned, you found in the report that there is a lack of living wage jobs, a job that would pay $23 an hour, which is what it's estimated that a single parent with a child, one child in Baltimore, would need to live on. Tell us more about how available jobs limit people getting through the barriers.
Well, sure. There's a variety of jobs that are out there, but there's really a few industries that are more likely to offer those family-supporting jobs. So construction, which has barriers related to transportation. The transportation and logistics sector is another sector that does have some jobs that pay a family-supporting wage. The healthcare sector is a very good one, but it does require quite a bit of education, typically. It's not something that's immediately available to someone as an entry-level position, but it is possible to move into a family-supporting job in that sector. And so, there's kind of a narrow band of these family-supporting jobs that are mid-skilled. There are plenty of family-supporting jobs that require a bachelor's degree or higher. But, it's expensive to obtain a bachelor's degree, and it takes quite a bit of support in order to be able to do that effectively. And so what you have in the market is kind of a bifurcation where there are a lot of low-skilled jobs that don't pay very much and certainly don't pay enough to keep someone from falling back into poverty. And then there are a lot of high-paying jobs that require quite a bit of credentials and training and experience in order to move into those jobs. And one of the things that we know from even though now we've come out of the recession and the unemployment rate is dropping, there are more people that are very highly qualified that are coming into the job market that maybe they weren't looking for a job before. Maybe one parent was staying at home, one parent working, one of the findings from the study is that for every three new highly qualified people with a bachelor's degree that entered the job market over the last 6 years, one low-skilled worker dropped out.
Jason, I wanted to ask you about the effect that the falling unemployment rate has. In this region, 5.5% in April is 1% lower than it was a year ago. Does that affect the people who are stuck behind these barriers, or is that more of an effect on middle-class jobs?
No, it affects the people with barriers because the reality is that employers want the most qualified worker and they're not looking for someone with barriers. So when they have a job opening, they get a flood of applicants of people who are hungry to work, and people who have more challenges, more barriers, they're last in line. And so they're competing with people who lost their job during the recession, but don't have some of these other challenges, and they're not getting the work.
Clifford White couldn't find a job, so he's starting his own business. Jason, do you see much of that?
There's a lot of people that want to start their own business, certainly we want to encourage entrepreneurship. It creates jobs and opportunities. It's a really hard way to go, and he should be commended for doing it. It sounds really exciting. He does talk a little bit about some of the challenges with the access to capital, which is another issue, and particularly, again, with people who have other barriers, it's going to be even harder to get access to capital. But that, I don't mean to discourage anyone. It's just a reality about sort of banking on entrepreneurship.
Well, Clifford White has a question for you guys.
My thing is, why don't you fund some entrepreneurs? Because we have good ideas. Sometimes in prison, all you have is time to come up with these ideas and then come home. And if there's somebody that believes in you or if there's backing, I'm proof that you can be successful.
Chris Seals, are there resources for ex-offenders who aspire to start their own businesses?
You know, Sheila, there are a lot of resources, but, you know, for an ex-offender, I think that the focus really needs to be on reducing those barriers. And they exist in all of the ways he mentioned and in other ways as well. There are not, to my knowledge, a lot of venture funds that are available or even micro lending funds that are available to somebody who's trying to start a business. We do know that minority-owned businesses tend to do well and tend to have customers that are minorities and tend to be funded by minorities. And so it's a there's certainly a lot of I think, you know, with Clifford's case, there's certainly a desire, a drive to work hard and to turn, you know, I think in Clifford's case, to turn his life around and really, really do quite well. But the types of resources that are typically available to an entrepreneur that doesn't have the background that Clifford has would be a lot higher. And I just don't think that he would have, you know, access to capital would be only one of the things that he would have a lack of access to.
Let me ask you the same question, Jason, because I promised Clifford I would ask you both.
Sure.
What kind of resources are there for someone like him?
I'm not aware of resources that are targeted to people who have a criminal background for entrepreneurship. I believe there was a task force bill that won't be very satisfying to him some number of years ago. I don't even know if it passed. But I think that the larger problem is addressing the issues for people who have a background and making sure that we're not punishing people forever for something that, as he mentioned, he did in his teen. It's a long time ago. We need to get past that. We need to recognize that to be smart on crime, we have to start forgiving the past and recognizing people for who they are now and for their opportunities and make those opportunities available. So if someone like Clifford or anyone else has a good idea and it's the kind of idea that would attract investment, the background should not be the factor that automatically eliminates their access to capital.
And Chris, that's what I wanted to ask you last, was looking at all that you found in this report, stepping back, I mean, how would you describe what needs to happen to change the picture?
We, in our report, we outline a couple of recommendations. And then in our upcoming report that we'll have out later this year, we have kind of a very detailed set of recommendations on a strategic plan for workforce development. But I'm going to highlight one thing, Sheila. One thing that's been shown to be much more effective is industry-led partnerships that provide people with a career pathway, if you will. They're really designed around the needs of two different clients, the worker and all of their needs, and the employer, the specific skills that they're looking for. We know for a fact that the number one thing that employers look for when deciding on a location to place their business is access to workforce and access to skills. And so there's a really great opportunity for industry-led partnerships that provide provide these career pathways to individuals. And that is one of the key recommendations that we have. It's something that obviously the Maryland legislature is standing behind with the new EARN grants as a first step towards creating those partnerships. And
this is EARN, which is Employment Advancement Right Now?
That's right. I don't know if the recipients of those grants have yet been publicly announced, but if in fact the research that's been done on those in other places holds true in the Baltimore region, those hold one of the best hopes for providing real pathways to opportunity for people that would otherwise be held back by these constellation of barriers.
Chris Seals is an economist from the consulting firm RDA Global. He wrote the report published today on barriers to employment in the Baltimore region. It's for the Opportunity Collaborative, a group of government and nonprofit people who are developing a regional plan for housing, transportation, and workforce development. Jason Perkins Cohen is executive director of the Job Opportunities Task Force, a workforce development nonprofit based in Baltimore. The EARN Awards will be announced today. More about it at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. That's where you'll also find a link to the report on the barriers to employment. I'm Sheila Cass. There's more ahead on Maryland Morning. Stay with us on 88.1.